Hey, welcome to this edition of the Hagmann Report. You know, just 10 days before Christmas, 17 days before the new year. Can you believe 2018 already? What happened to 2017? What happened to 2016? What happened to the 70s? That's what I want to know. All right. Anyway, you know. And that's right. If you remember the 70s, you really didn't live them. So, all right. But you know how it is. Seriously, time is really going in 2018, and we're looking at events. What a news-packed year 2017 was, and equally news-packed, if not more. We've got a great guest coming on with us, Dr. Lori Handrahan, a book, Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape, a very serious subject, something that's extremely topical for today. And she is just a gracious woman, and she knows, not just gracious, but man, I'll tell you, you talk about some information, just buckle in because... get ready. Before we get to our guest, I want to tell you about Omaha Steaks. Do you know I sent out a number of packages to some very special people using omahasteaks.com? I did not have to go out to the mall. I didn't have to do anything. Just click up a mouse. And if you're struggling to find the perfect gift for someone who has it all, I want to just tell you about Omaha Steaks, where for only $49.99, you can get my family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter our code HH in the search bar. It's 75% off. That's 75% savings. And while you're there, peruse the over 500 gourmet gift ideas and take a look at the choices that you've got to purchase: seafood, poultry, pork, veal, lamb, and consider as well the convenience and quick shopping for anyone that's on your list. And they've got online recipes and wine pairings and more. But right now, Omaha Steaks is giving an exclusive savings just for you, the listeners of the Hagmann Report. Listen to everything that you'll get for under $50. I've got to name them because I can't believe it. It's that great. You get two filet mignons, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, and boy, are they good. They're just, four kielbasa sausages, four steak burgers, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, which are just, I don't know what's in those, but man, I'll tell you, when we cook those up, everyone just, that dessert doesn't, there's no dessert left. There's not nary a crumb, shall we say. Plus, one Omaha Steak seasoning packet, and if you order now, you'll get four additional kielbasa sausages free. All of that for $49.99. All you have to do, go to omahasteaks.com, enter our code HH in the search bar to get the 75% savings. It's a gift guaranteed to be a hit. And please take advantage of it. And make sure you type in HH in the search bar. You'll thank me. You'll thank me. You'll be a hero. So, anyway, now a very serious topic about America's trade in child rape. You know, we've been hearing so many headlines about the perversity that's taking place in our country, around our country, outside of our country. It's not a pleasant topic, but when we do discuss this, we need to discuss this with experts. Our next guest, Joe, is an expert. Lori Handrahan, she's got a PhD. Dr. Lori Handrahan, and
she's the author of a book, Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape. You can go to her website, LoriHandrahan.com, and the book is also available on Amazon. And Dr. Lori has over 20 years of humanitarian and human rights work in Central Asia, Africa, and the Balkans. Her focus is gender-based violence and conflict, post-conflict environments, UN reform, and ending child sex abuse. She completed her PhD work at London School of Economics. Her work is published widely, from academic journals to the New York Times, Christian Science Monitor, Huffington Post, the Washington Times, Forbes, and many others. She's also been a guest on just about every mainstream.
Yeah, network. She's very well known. And I didn't mean to, I do that all the time. I interrupt my son, and I get emails about it saying, you know, why don't you just shut up, Doug? And thank you for pointing that out. But I do want to mention this. This book, Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape, when John gave this to me and I started reading this, look, I look at things a lot differently now. This really was an educational read for me. And there's not a wasted word here. And, the author, of course, Dr. Hanrahan, gets into child pornography and the military, lawyers, judges, things that, you know, even academia, it's just an incredible read, a resource for information. So I'm going to shut up now. Go ahead, Joe. Not that I interrupted you, but this, grab this if you're interested in this topic. And you should be, because it's of national interest.
Dr. Laurie Hanrahan, welcome to the Hagmann Report.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Just want to ask you this question. What got you started down this road?
Well, it was a personal situation for me, involving my daughter, which a lot of people know about because I've posted a lot about that on my Medium account. So if anybody's interested, if they Google my name and they go to my Medium account, they can see that. But I didn't understand what was happening and how this was allowed to happen in America, which is supposed to be governed by democracy and the rule of law. And so I did what I'm trained to do. I'm a trained social scientist, so I research, right? And social scientists research large-scale societal patterns of behavior. So I started researching. And we're very much like private investigators. I now have become really good friends with a lot of law enforcement and private investigators, and it's a very similar type of investigative strategy, except we would put together lots of data and then look at a pattern of behavior. So that was the beginning, trying to understand how my daughter could be trafficked in family court in the state of Maine, how she could be confirmed for rape at the age of 2 and then be put in the sole custody of her father. So that was the beginning of this research, and it was a very painful learning curve, and it was very painful research to do. And at every point, and still, I keep thinking, I really understand the scope of this crime, and I can't be shocked anymore. And I'm always shocked. I mean, it's
by the way, it's a devastating crime. when you get to that point where nothing shocks you anymore, that's a bad place to be.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. But I understand that. Okay, so this was born out of personal experience.
Yes.
Yeah, that's tough.
Wow. Okay. And you're, if you don't mind me probing this, to the extent you're comfortable, when I say born out of personal experiences, relates to your daughter was victimized, right?
Yes, she was confirmed for rape by her father at the age of 2. Mm. So, an organization in Maine called the Spurwink Clinic, and Dr. Larry Ritchie is very well known in Maine and all over New England and nationally. He's recognized as one of the top doctors, medical doctors, on this issue of child sex abuse. And the entire team confirmed that my daughter had been sexually abused by her father at the age of 2, and there's a forensic report. There was a forensic interview done with my daughter. There were 2 medical reports. Her vagina was shredded. She had a urinary tract infection. Had to go on antibiotics. And
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Dr. Hanrahan, I apologize. I think we might be having some audio problems. Pardon me if I ask you to speak up a little bit more.
Sure.
Because I'm having some issues with my equipment here, apparently. Okay, so this led you on a path, a certain path for, to where you're at now. This line. By the way, we are private investigators by profession, so consider us friends, allies, and you know whatever you need from us. Go ahead, Joe. I'll kick it over to you because I know that you had some.
Well, Dr. Lurie, let's start with the numbers. I guess we have to break it into a couple of different categories. You have the child rape and trafficking. Well, let's talk about the numbers as far as how many people are caught versus how many successful prosecutions we have with those people who are caught. And I know from the table of contents in your book, you have some of these numbers worked out.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that's a really great question. I mean, we don't know. That's kind of the whole point of the book, is that it really sets out a research agenda that I would like to be able to fulfill or help other agencies or people fulfill. Nobody has the data. DOJ hasn't been collecting the data, although they're supposed to. The U.S. Sentencing Commission hasn't updated federal child pornography convictions since 2012. So that's the most recent data that we have. And then what I did, I have a whole chapter on data where I try to explain the data that is known, and there's a lot of small pieces of data that are out there, but nobody's pulled those pieces together. And I've tried to do that, but it's not a really rigorous analysis because we haven't been able to pull all the data together. So one of the things that I thought was very important with the book is when people read it, and it is shocking and it's horrifying and it's very devastating to read, I didn't want to leave people there. I wanted people to feel like, but I can do something, but I can take action. So we have action items all over the book, and this is what I was trained to do. My PhD is applied social science, so we were always being pushed at London School of Economics. Well, so what? I mean, so you've got this data, and how are you going to use that to make the world a better place? So that's, you know, always been part of everything I do. And on the data bit, I talked to the public affairs woman at the U.S. Sentencing Commission, a really, really nice woman named Liz. So you'll see her Twitter account is in the little action item box, and her phone number, her email. And she said, just tell everybody, if you want us to update the federal child pornography convictions and all of the data of how many were arrested versus how many were prosecuted, how many were convicted, what kind of sentences are we seeing, what are the demographics of those, just ask people to contact me because we respond to the general public. So that's an easy action item. You can just go on Twitter and say, hey, U.S. Sentencing Commission, please update your child pornography arrest and conviction data. And you'll actually be doing something really important, and you can do it right from your couch, you know, your kitchen table. It won't put you at risk or in harm's way, but it would really have a big impact. She's also said, you know, of course, if a senator or a congressman asks or a congresswoman asks us to do this, we can too. So I was very lucky. I was up on the Hill last week and this week, and I met with two amazing congressmen. One is Pete Olson, a Republican from Texas, and the other is Bobby Rush, from a Democrat from Illinois. Offices are right next to each other. Both of them care deeply about this issue. And I drafted a letter for their staff to send to the U.S. Sentencing Commission. They said, we're on it. We're going to ask them to update this data. We're going to have hearings about this. You know, I'm working hard now to try to implement some of the policy items that need to change in order for us to understand this war against our children that most people have no idea is even happening.
No, you're right, and a lot of people don't want to know. And that's what I want to ask you next is, why do you think, is it because of how graphic and the emotional response that it can gauge talking about this? Why do so many Americans either ignore these, turn a blind eye to this kind of information, or not want to hear about it?
I think that's another great question. I was just getting my eyes examined for my annual eye examination at my eye doctor's here in D.C., and I had they know that I write a lot, and they asked if I published any books recently, and I said yes, and one of my friends made these little cards that we're giving out to everybody, and so I handed one to the guys at my eye doctor's. And they immediately said, oh, God, no, I don't want to hear about that. That's awful. Don't tell me about it. How could you research that? And people always have this kind of visceral reaction of cringing and, you know, just making this with their whole body freezing up sort of response. And I say that's what pedophiles count on. So pedophiles count on you saying, don't tell me, I don't want to know. They count on your silence. So congratulations, because you're helping the pedophiles by reacting that way. And they all stopped and they said, well, what could we do about it? So I said, well, I'm glad you asked, because we've got a lot of action items in the book. And, you know, I'll give you guys a copy of the book for free, because you guys have been my eye doctors for a long time. So, you know, it's important for people to know that they can't turn away. I don't think it's only the crime of child rape and pedophilia that people turn away from. In my career, I've always worked as a humanitarian. I've just come back from South Sudan. I've worked in human rights and humanitarian field for 20 years. every Holocaust people have turned away from. Every Holocaust people have disbelieved. It can't really be happening. People can't be being tortured. We humanity can't be treating other human beings this way. And of course, over and over and over again, we do. And if you read the research on crimes against humanity and Holocaust, it's because good people do nothing, right? Good people turn away.
You know, if I can just publicly say thank you, because we are obviously a, well, I'm not sure how much John told you, but we are a news platform, but we look at things through a Christian, we have a Christian bias, obviously, a Christian worldview. And I am absolutely lack of, or the people who just refuse to even address this issue, or when they do, it's as you described. So, you know, it would be like, a homicide investigator going to the scene of a homicide, a messy homicide. No one likes to do that, but it's got to be done. Of course, you know, you or anyone responding to a case of child, whether it's pedophilia or whether it's human sex trafficking, it's got to be done. And just because you don't like it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to get on the soapbox here, but I'm just absolutely stunned by the level of inaction and by the, you know, turning of the heads. I don't want to talk about this or it, equally bad, and then I'm going to shut up because I'm sorry, but this just gets my goat. When you've got publications, and I'm not going to I won't even name the dirtbag publications again. I'm sorry, this is, I'm taking this personal, because it is personal. When you talk about, trafficking in children, and you show a picture of a little boy, in a cage that was taken, without getting into details. And they say, well, that boy could be playing around. You know, could be playing a game of hide and seek. And they mock the very thought that this stuff is going on. To me, there's a special place in hell for people like that. But anyway, I digress. But so thank you. I just accept this as my thanks, and I'll quit my personal rant now. But okay.
No, I mean, I don't want to see them get a place in hell. I want to see them get that hellish place here on earth. I mean,
better,
you know,
stated.
There should be very long prison sentences followed by lifetime on the sex offender registry, lifetime supervised release, and mandatory chemical castration. You know, and these guys are getting off. I mean, you mentioned the dog cage thing. That's very common to keep children in cages. So when I look at the cases, I took a lot of effort in the book because there's been a lot of pushback. These pedophiles want to keep committing their crime with impunity. So anybody who does try to speak out against this gets labeled conspiracy theory, it's fringe, it's crazy people, this isn't true sort of thing. And so what my contribution, I hope, is my credibility as a PhD, as a social scientist, and really documenting the crime. So when I see an arrest in mainstream media, I then get the court documents if I can. I can't always get them. I talk to the lead investigator and prosecutor if I can, or the court clerk. But the court documents themselves, the criminal complaints, really do detail exactly what's going on. So you mentioned dog. One of the early cases that I looked at that just shocked me was a dean at the University of Virginia named Michael Morris. And that's profiled in the book. It's also up on my Medium site about professors and staff who've been arrested for trading in child rape. So his arrest was widely reported by mainstream media, but not one journalist got his criminal complaint from the Department of Justice and reported on what the man was actually doing. And when you do, it changes the entire crime. So in that case, DOJ had spent a lot of work, very good prosecutors, I think it was in Eastern District of Virginia, had worked very hard, and they told me they were really grateful that somebody cared about getting the criminal complaint. So when you got it, you found out that this dean at the University of Virginia, Michael Morris, one of the pictures that he was trading in, or videos, included children in dog cages. And this is what he was using to sexually stimulate and give himself pleasure. You know, another was a girl being forced to perform oral sex, a six-year-old girl, with a knife at her throat. You know, he was pretending to be a 12 or 13-year-old girl or boy setting up fake Facebook pages to get other 12 and 13 and 10-year-old children to masturbate for him and produce child pornography. This is a dean at the University of Virginia. And when he was sentenced, all these people came forward and said, but he's such a wonderful man, and he plays great tennis, and he's a father of teenage children, and please don't send him to jail. No, he is not a wonderful man. He is committing the most horrific crime. He is trafficking children on campus, on University of Virginia computers. You know, how could this be a wonderful man? It's not. But you've got to read the criminal complaints. And that's, if you started to read the criminal complaints, you'd see that the children in cages is very common.
Yeah, exactly. And thank you for bringing that out. And the component, the criminal complaint, and I know exactly what you're saying because, I don't need to add anything to that. That stands on its own.
An interesting component of child pornography and child trafficking that you detail in your book, a whole chapter on, is the racial dynamics of the offenders. And I want to get into that in just a little bit, but first I want to ask you about Chapter 5 of your book, The National Security Problem. You say that child pornography is a national security issue. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. That's another good question. I mean, that's where I started when I was still a professor at American University. I was really only looking at it as a national security problem because I was in the School of International Service, and this is my background, it's international work, international relations, humanitarian response. And I was looking at how many government employees were doing this with impunity. And so that's the heart of the book. It's the longest chapter, is why it's a national security issue. One example that I often use is David O'Brien, and he's profiled in the book, and it's also up on my Medium site. David O'Brien was the top nuclear scientist in America. He was at Patrick Air Force Base in Florida, and he is responsible. He's leading the team that's responsible for monitoring any kind of nuclear activity that is happening around the world that may be threatening our safety. And what is he doing? He was downloading child pornography from Russian organized crime websites onto U.S. Air Force computers at the Nuclear Deterrence Monitoring Center at Patrick Air Force Base. That's just one of hundreds of examples. But if that's not a national security issue, I don't know what is.
Well, yeah, you can't. Yeah, I don't think you can get any bigger of an example. Well, I suppose you could, but you'd have to try hard. That's amazing. Okay.
It's amazing. Right. So, again, the local media covered it. It never made national news, to my knowledge, and I think I've looked at every media article that was written on David O'Brien's case. I may have missed one. I'm happy to be corrected. I sent it around. I have some producers, friends at CNN. I have some national journalist friends here in D.C. Nobody would cover it. I'm like, guys, this is a serious national security issue. I sent it around to the national security think tank, talking head community here in D.C. Nobody picked. And he's not the only one. There are many, many, many more cases. I have a whole list of military, and that's really outdated, who have been involved in this crime. It's horrific. So then you start, and in the book, I only focus. We had a lot of difficulty trying to figure out how to frame the book because every profession, it's just epidemic, right? So what I decided to do was focus on government employees. And except for private practice attorneys, the entire book just looks at government employees. So public education sector, the military, the judges and the prosecutors, the lawyers. So many government employees are doing this on government computers. And this is an easy fix. Put in a blocking system. Why isn't it required that every single government agency have a blocking system so that you cannot access children being raped on your government computer, right? This is easy. There's been no political will because there's been no recognition how much this is happening because there's been no research on it. So you sort of peel the onion back.
Okay. Now, just so I'm clear, because it seems like there could be two separate issues that we're talking about here or you're referencing. And I love your book, the way it kind of gets into the government employees trafficking children on government computers. I mean, it's fantastic in terms of its content. Now, is there more to this? That was kind of my next question, or the related question. Obviously, we've got a problem with this for, how can I put this delicately, self-gratification, I suppose, or entertainment purposes. But is the government, how can I say this or ask this question without sounding like a Looney Tune? Are we looking at perhaps something embedded within our own government here that's maybe something more than what we're,
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, people will say, well, you know, maybe it's all not true. Maybe this is one theory that gets put forward to me quite often. Maybe it's all just fake, you know, Russian intelligence trying to make it look like our government employees are doing this. Well, once again, if you sit down and you read all the criminal complaints that I have read, and if you, most people aren't going to do that, so that's why I profile in the book. If you think all of these cases and all of these federal prosecutions are all just fake, then I don't know how to even respond to that, because that's obviously not true.
Exactly.
You know, that's just ridiculous and ludicrous. What I think is happening, and this is in every single sector, it's always white men in positions of power over and over and over again. So John had said there's a whole chapter on race, and yeah. So this is why I was able to talk to Congressman Pete Olson and Congressman Bobby Rush, because there was a hearing 2 weeks ago up on the Hill. Martha Blackburn was presiding. They had four experts, including, I think she was a vice president at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And Congressman Rush said, is there a racial element to this crime? And it's totally silent. It was an FBI agent, an NGO director, National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and a law professor. And they don't answer. And I believe he asked twice. I'd have to go back and look at the CNN transcript. But it was just like dead silence. And then finally, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children person, who was the expert witness, said she'd have to go look it up. And this is the most basic piece of information if you're supposed to be an expert on this crime. What's the perpetrator profile? Right? That's the basic question, right? Shouldn't you be able to answer that?
Works for me, yeah.
Right, that's it. So you've got these experts, and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, you know, she's probably making $250,000 a year, and she can't answer what's the perpetrator profile. Now, it's very rare, and you guys are private investigators, so you correct me if I'm wrong, it's rare to have a crime that is so significantly demographic in its racial component for the perpetrators. So the U.S. Sentencing Commission, and this is why they're updating their data, is very important. As of 2012, 80 to 90% every year that they looked at it, and these are only federal, not including state or local, federal convictions. So not just that they were arrested, but they were actually prosecuted and convicted. It was 80 to 90% white men. That's very, very serious. So if we want to stop the crime, we have to understand why it's 80 to 90% white men.
Okay,
right?
That's a natural progression. Go ahead. Yeah.
Right. So you need that data in order to create policy profiles that will help us stop the crime. And then, so if you look at the section on military in my national security chapter, there are some good mainstream journalists who have been doing very, very good work on this. And AP is one of them. AP did a year-long investigation about child sex abuse in the military, and they called it a cascade. So a similar word to epidemic. It's just like, what word do you use when it's so overwhelming that you don't have any words for it? So the AP year-long investigation detailed that every time they looked at somebody who'd been convicted, not just arrested, but the guy was actually convicted for child rape, hands-on or training in child rape, it was always a man in the leadership position in the military. It wasn't the low-level guys. It was the senior guys. So the same thing when I started to look at police officers. It's not, okay, you'll find some entry-level, on-the-beat street police officers, but over and over and over again, it was police chiefs.
Yep.
You know, I had to make a separate section for police chiefs when I was starting to organize it, because I was like, oh, my God. So what if you're a mother, like I was, and your daughter's confirmed for rape, and you go to the police, like I did, with your forensic report, which should be enough for the police to take action, and they say, we're not going to do anything. Well, now that I know how many police chiefs are doing this, I start to understand how this is possible for me and my daughter to have been in this situation. So what happens is, if the police chief himself is engaged in the trade of child rape, and somebody comes forward, you've basically just identified yourself as a vulnerable mother or child to be caught up into that crime, right? So anyway, it's a, over and over and over again, when you look at professors and staff, it's the provosts, it's the deans, it's the presidents, it's the department heads. Over and over, it's the men in leadership, and they're almost exclusively white. So I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, and I say that very clearly at the beginning of the book because I get asked this question all the time. I don't know what the psychology behind the crime is. What I care about is ending the impunity for the crime. And what I can tell you is the data shows us, based on the convictions at the federal level, that this is white men overwhelmingly perpetrating this crime. Then when you look at other separate little pieces of data, which I mentioned in that chapter on race, there's a coping study, what they looked at, the academics were given access to some of the, they have, when cops arrest somebody and they've got 30,000 pictures and videos, they dump it into these national databases which are being built. And mainly they just sit there. Nobody's going to try to find the children because the resources aren't there. So you'll get these databases with 6 million images that nobody's looking at. So in this coping study, the academics in Europe were allowed to look at some of these database videos and images that have been taken during arrests. And it was overwhelmingly white children. And so they're wondering, well, that's sort of interesting. Why? Why is it overwhelmingly white children? Then you look at this most recent Canadian study that was just released at the beginning of this year, 2017, and the Canadian study says it's a widespread tragedy now that fathers are involved in doing this. Okay, so you've got a couple of different separate pieces of data. You've got overwhelmingly white men being convicted of the crime. You've got the Canadians saying it's overwhelmingly fathers, and then you've got one study that says a lot of the images are of white children. Well, of course, this all makes sense, right? If you're a white man and you're a pedophile and you have access to children, your own children, they're going to be white children that you're going to use to produce this child right. pornography. So that's that answers a question that you asked earlier. That's a good example of three different pieces of data that nobody has connected. And it's a very obvious connection.
Exactly. I was going to just say that. How is that not connected? Of course, that speaks to the perpetrator profile,
especially
or lack thereof.
With such a disproportionate number.
Yeah.
It's obviously right. something you have to look at.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, now I'm speculating. This is not fact-based, and I try to be very clear on when I speculate and when I can provide precise known data. You know, I'm speculating that a lot of the reason that this isn't public is because there's so many white men in positions of power that appear to be involved in this crime. They're in leadership positions where they will not allow this data to come forward, right? Like the presidents of the university, like the heads of police stations, right? Like top FBI guys. So what I often say to people is, look, there are some great cops out there that I have enormous respect for, and you can just tell by all of the arrests that there are a lot of cops out there doing their job, and I can't imagine having to watch these videos and images. Just reading the criminal complaints, it was devastating for me.
You can't unsee that kind of stuff, by the
no,
way. No, you know.
Exactly, no. But if you're a pedophile cop, what unit do you want to work for?
Oh, good point.
You want to be in the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. So just here in D.C., it was about, I'd have to go back and look at the record, it's up on my Medium site, a detective in the Northern Virginia Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force was arrested in Maryland because I believe that he lived in Maryland, although he worked in Northern Virginia, because we're in this little tri-state area with the district in the middle. You know, you have competing law enforcement, and there's a lot of competition, as you guys probably both know, in law enforcement. Local cops hate the FBI. The FBI doesn't work well with anybody, as far as I can tell. There's competition between local cops and state cops and sheriffs and PDs. In any case, this guy worked for the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force in Virginia, and he was, of course he was the volunteer for the ice hockey, youth ice hockey team. I mean, it's super, of course he led the Boy Scouts, of course he worked with vulnerable children, of course he volunteered for the Boys and Girls Club. They're gonna try to get access to children. So he was molesting children on the away trips, and the children reported it, and the local police came to arrest him. He shot himself during the arrest, so he didn't face justice. But, you know, of course there are cops who are supposed to be protecting children and prosecuting these crimes, but they're really involved in the crimes. That's obviously happened.
That's okay. And that to me, it makes perfect sense. We've seen this phenomenon, by the way, volunteer firemen. And this is not to critique them, but, they start a fire and they go and put it out, or they watch, or the arsonist watches the fire, the fire burn. It's that kind of, in a way, it's the same kind of, in my view, the same kind of perversity, I suppose. But
is this what in your book you identify as pedophile magnets?
Yeah. So what I say to people, it took me so long to really understand this, because I kept looking at it as one-off things, and it would sort of grow from there. And that's how most people see it. They see an arrest in their community of the local Boy Scout leader or the police chief, and they're always so shocked because he was the nicest guy and he loved children, right? And he was so powerful in the community and so active. So pedophiles are people that you really like. They're charming. They need to cultivate this personality to commit the crime and access the children. They're not people that you're scared to leave your child with, right? You think, what an amazing man. He just loves children. He's such a great mentor for my six-year-old son, whose father has gone away, or I'm a single mom with a six-year-old son. They will be around children, and they will be charming around children. So anybody that you see, and more women, unfortunately, are now engaged in the crime, but usually when the women are engaged in the crime, the men are asking the women to do it with them or for them, or the women are doing it for money. But if you see men who are overly engaged with young children, so they're giving them presents, they're always taking them for ice cream, this is the Roy Moore thing. He went to the family court, and he's hanging out, and he's watching the divorces, waiting to pick off a vulnerable child. So he allegedly said to that mother, let me take your 14-year-old daughter out so she doesn't have to witness, what's going on between you and your husband. She thinks, what a lovely DA. He cares so much about children. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So there are pedophile magnets. So like daycares are pedophile magnets. It's well known that daycares are used as, not all daycares, but many daycares are used and even set up as fronts for pedophiles. They go for under fours, and I discussed this. It's not a crime of attraction. They're not attracted to three-year-old children or two-year-old children. Under fours can't be witnesses in court. It's a strategic decision. It's a crime against whoever is vulnerable, right? So if you don't have a witness in court, you don't have a crime, which means you have impunity, which is what pedophiles are always seeking. They go after disabled children in huge numbers. And that, the way that I discovered that was really, I think the research I did on special education teachers was the one that really, really devastated me. And after I had done that, I stopped for months, and I couldn't do any research. So I'm starting to look at how many teachers are being arrested. And then within that subset, I'm seeing special education teacher after special education teacher. And I put a whole list up on my Medium profile. And again, it's outdated because there's been so many more arrests. And I can't, one person without a salary or a staff or... And I'm thinking, who would molest a Down syndrome kid? And I'm thinking of the parents who have a child who has special needs, and how hard it is to be a parent of a child who has special needs. And you finally find this great special education teacher that you can trust, that you think is great for you and your family and helping your child, and then you find out the guy's been anally raping your six-year-old son. Because, not because he's attracted to a child with Down syndrome, because that child can't be a witness in court. I mean, it's just absolutely devastating.
Yeah, it is. And, it's always shocking to see the brazen nature of some of these people who do this, who inject themselves right in the middle of, these daycares and schools and priests and churches, and we've seen it so much. Some of the examples, you see what we have in the Catholic Church and the huge institutional problem they have of not turning these pedophiles over to the authorities. Instead, they try geographical cures or whatever they're trying to do, the cover-ups. And then, you said in universities, we see what happened in Penn State with Jerry Sandusky. I mean, this is a huge problem, and you saw how far and wide that was spread. And it's so alarming when it happens. But I wanted to talk back about what you mentioned about the government computers. Why don't they block this? If I remember right, there was a huge scandal not too long ago involving the Pentagon and all these people who were caught with the child pornography on their computers or whatnot. And did you say why not have a program or something where, you know, it would automatically block these kind of sites?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was Operation Flickr. So that's a really good example. Again, that's a great example to bring up. There was some mainstream media about that. That was Anderson Cooper reported on it. And then it just dies. It just goes away. It gets covered up. It was over 5,000 guys. And it was an ICE operation. And I believe they were in Southeast Asia, never expecting to track this back to the Pentagon. And the brazenness, which you just mentioned, they're using their .mil email accounts, their professional email accounts. I don't even want to send a private email on my, when I've worked in an institution, on institutional emails about somebody's birthday party, let alone commit a crime, you know, on a military computer with a military email using your own credit card in your own name. The brazenness, I believe, comes out of a sense of impunity because they know they've got each other's backs. They know that they're not going to be held accountable because they're all protecting each other. So that's another element of the crime that most people don't understand. Normally, when you commit a crime, again, please correct me if I'm wrong. You guys have much more experience in this as private investigators than I have. But when you commit a crime, you tend to commit that crime in secret. You don't want people to know that you've committed that crime. You cover up the crime that you've committed. That's typical, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. If you're going to try to get away with it.
Yeah, right. unless you're a moron, but yeah, that's, it's, right. Yeah.
Right, but not pedophiles. The minute that a pedophile commits a crime, he goes onto the internet and he boasts and he brags and he shows videos of him raping a child, right, in these huge networks. So they want everybody to know about the crime they've committed. They publicly document and take criminal forensic evidence of the crime they're committing with videos and live streams and pictures. And then they broadcast, and often they'll broadcast their own face. You know, so that
that's amazing. To me, that's case closed. I mean, give me a case like that. We can say, hey, you know, okay. But
right.
because they feel that they're not going to get caught, or
yeah, they know they're not going to get, and they talk about this on the chat lines. What they know, in my understanding, again, I'm really happy to be corrected if I'm mistaken, but I'm not a frontline law enforcement working this crime, so I'm the social scientist looking at secondary data. From what I've seen from the criminal complaints and when I've talked to law enforcement who work the crime and prosecutors who work the crime who do sit in these chat rooms, they know the pedophiles say, there's no way, you know, it's a very small chance that we'll be caught because there aren't enough cops working this crime. They don't have top technology. The pedophiles have better technology, and they just have sheer numbers right now. So, for example, this is a policy change that it could be easily made, which needs to happen. You have enormous a number of law enforcement on drugs compared to almost nothing on child exploitation. So one of my friends who's a private investigator, Trent Steele, who runs the Anti-Predator Project, which I profiled in the book just before Chapter
right.
5, Trent was telling me that, and I don't have the numbers in my head correctly, but in Miami-Dade County where he works, now he works for child protection full-time during the day, and then pro bono at night he goes out undercover as a private investigator and works for free for families whose children have been taken. And he would love to work full-time on this. He's trying to raise money to do that. There are also a lot of, sort of sidebar, there are a lot of scam organizations out there who do prey on vulnerable parents who have no intention of finding the children or know that they never will. Take the parents.
If I can interrupt you here, when you said when the children are taken, you mean by Child Protective Services or to?
No, trafficked by. So like organized crime, Russian organized crime apparently
okay.
is very much in control in Miami. And the Latino crime units are all over Florida too. So no, not by by child traffickers. Yeah, sorry for.
No, that. I just want to be clear on that because okay, so all right, okay, go continue. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take you off.
So he was telling me that in Miami-Dade County, there's something like, and again, this isn't the exact number, something like 200 law enforcement who work drugs, the drug crime, and then there's like two that work child exploitation. You know, they're completely overwhelmed. So one of the policy changes that I would like to see, too, which is easy, it's just a matter of political will, you've got a lot of these government employees who have committed this horrific crime of moral turpitude. And they're in prison, and they're still getting their $8,000 to $10,000 to $12,000 a month retirement, government-funded retirement, because the Police Chiefs Retirement Association didn't revoke their retirement. Now, I say, if you're a government employee and you have been caught trading in child rape, right, which is what child pornography is, trafficking of children for the purposes of rape and abuse, that's a crime of moral turpitude. You don't deserve my tax money for your retirement. You don't get that retirement. It's automatically revoked. Then you could use that retirement to hire new law enforcement and prosecutors to work the crime. Because we need hundreds and hundreds more law enforcement on this crime.
Absolutely we do. And a reassignment of resources, I think, is in order to be sure. And our guest, Dr. Lori Hanrahan, author of Child Rape, excuse me. The information put forth in this book is, will just knock your socks off. I mean, it's just what an educational and informational work. And we owe Dr. Lori Hanrahan a debt of gratitude for putting this together, as difficult as that would be. And of course, her website is LoriHanrahan.com. That's LoriHanrahan.com.
In the book, Epidemic: America's Trade in Child Rape. Lori, we got about 9.5 minutes left. I want to ask you, what are some of the action items that people can do to stand up against the perpetrators of child trafficking and child pornography?
Yeah. So the U.S. Sentencing Commission is one action item. There's another one for Betsy DeVos, who's the Secretary of Education. So there is no public list right now of anybody who's been a public school employee from daycare all the way up to public universities who has been arrested for child pornography and convicted. We need to have a public list. The Department of Education could easily say, right, we're going to put 10 people on this. We're going to get a public list. If you were an educator and you've been arrested and charged for this crime, your name is on a national database that anybody can check, because registered sex offenders are skipping state and getting jobs in other schools. And that was, USA Today did a fabulous, also really great journalism. They did a year-long investigation. They looked at millions of reports, and they detailed, it's called passing the trash, which is exactly what you had said about the Catholic Church. Well, we'll just pass this guy on so he'll become somebody else's problem. Right, so he'll continue to rape and destroy more children, right? Children's mm-hmm. lives are destroyed by this, because a school or a university doesn't want to have their reputation be tarnished. This is another mindset that we have to change. Protecting a criminal within your institution does not protect the reputation of that institution.
Right.
That makes you an organized crime institution. That makes you a criminal institution. Protecting criminals is not good for your reputation. You know, that's it. That's how it goes. You ought to look at the Catholic Church. How has it been for their reputation? Not so good. If you are aware that a criminal is in your institution, that criminal should be exposed and reported. Then you should say, we're going to install NetClean is one of them. It's one I talk about a lot because I really like it. I'm not a tech person, too, so I'm not an IT person, so there may be better software out there, but it's a former Swedish Marine who developed this. It's you can buy it. It's being sold in America, too, and it's a blocking software so that anybody who attempted to trade in child rape on an organization's computer that had this involved, law enforcement would be immediately notified if the institution set that up so that law enforcement could be notified, which they should be. So that's one, another thing. It would be great if everybody wrote or sent a tweet to Betsy DeVos and said, let's have a public list. If you were an educator and you've been convicted of this crime, let's make sure that you never get another job in education so that everybody's aware of your crime and it's easy to look these people up. Another thing that people can do that would be extremely helpful, you see the arrest of somebody in your community. You look on the local news and you see that the local fire chief has been arrested, and it says 30 counts of child pornography, which is meaningless to people. Nobody knows what that means. Go down to the courthouse, get the criminal complaints, go over to your local media station, contact your local journalists, and ask them to report on what's in the criminal complaint so that the community knows what this person was doing. That's really, really important. And if the journalists start to hear from their local community over and over and over again, we want you to report on the real nature of this person's crime, the journalists will start reporting on it. And if they do, people will start to become aware of how epidemic this is and how much all of our children are at risk. And I hope we'll start to protect our children.
Absolutely. Otherwise, it's too clean, too clinical, too nice, too vague as well. And I think you're right on the money there with that.
I want to ask you about this. John just handed me an article. John Grisham says sentencing for child porn offenders is too harsh. They aren't real pedophiles. This was in an interview he did with The Telegraph. And I saw in your book, did you talk to John Grisham?
No, but I talked to Peter Foster, who was the journalist with The Telegraph, who reported that story. So that's when I had just been wrongly terminated from my position at American University for writing about this. And I was really at a loss, because when I was a professor at American University, I had a public platform, a small one, not a huge one, but I had a public legitimate platform, and I could get published quite easily. And then as soon as I lost my position, nobody would publish me, right? Mm-hmm. So all my friends said, just put it up on Medium. And I thought, Medium's just a blog. Anybody can do that. I don't want to do that. That's not helpful. But they all said, well, you don't have a choice. Are you going to stop researching? Are you going to stop writing? What are you going to do? So they really pushed me, and some of my younger millennial friends were like, "This is what we're doing now." So that story on John Grisham was the first. If you go on my Medium profile, you scroll all the way down, you'll see it. It's the very first one that I posted, and I couldn't believe, because it happened. There were a couple of news stories all at the same time, and again, I said, "Let's connect the dots." But so that John Grisham one is interesting. So I met Peter Foster. He was here in D.C. I called him up. I said, "You got to be kidding me! I'm researching this stuff. You got to really explain what's happening, you know. This is not a drunk men who by accident push a wrong button on a computer and end up doing child porn. You cannot push a wrong button on your computer and suddenly get into child porn. It's hard to get into child porn chats. You have to first display all of your child pornography to the group that you're trying to get in so that they can determine that you're really a pedophile and that you're not law enforcement, and then they will let you in. You don't just get access to this stuff by accident. So, yeah, that was interesting. So Peter Foster had told me, he's now back in, I think he's back in London now. He's not in D.C. anymore. But he had told me it was really interesting, because John Grisham was doing an interview, and they were videoing the interview, and it was just on one of his new books. Had nothing to do with child pornography or pedophilia. And out of the blue, he starts saying that our criminal justice system is broken because all these men like him, you know, older men his age, have by accident done this, and they're now being put in prisons, and it's not fair because they never really committed a crime.
He sounds like possibly an offender, if not at the very least a sympathizer.
Absolutely. Well, Rosie O'Donnell called for him to meet immediately. She went on Twitter and she said, FBI, go, that's probable cause, check his computers. I mean, people,
right.
there was like 2 days of like media outrage, and then it died down, and then he recanted his statement. But it's out there. What I always say to people is, the only people I know that want to protect pedophiles are other pedophiles. Because if you are not a pedophile, you find child rape to be the most abhorrent crime possible, and it outrages you. And you either want to take action, or you do that, which we talked, I don't want to know at all. But the people, so I get three reactions from people when I tell them what I do for research. Either I don't want to know, or, oh my God, this is so outrageous. What can I do to help? This is horrible. This is terrible. I'm going to take action. Or they start saying, well, those poor pedophiles. And then I know. I feel like I can tell immediately. And I've had cops tell me that too. They say, you know, I don't want to profile people, but I can smell a pedophile the minute I know immediately. There's a very distinct profile to a pedophile.
Lori, we only got about 2 minutes left. Do you see, at least we see it here, society trying to normalize this behavior to some extent?
Yeah, it terrifies me. I mean, they're doing it. It's not by accident. They have a very strategic campaign,
right,
where they, and I talk about that in the book, they've been rolling out this junk science, where they're talking about the poor pedophile, the non-offending pedophile, the sympathy for pedophiles. Are you kidding? When you read what these people are doing in the criminal complaints, they say they want to see blood. They want to see the children cry. They want to see the children killed. They don't have any sympathy for these 1- and 2- and 3-year-old children. I mean, a 1-year-old baby being anally raped, handcuffed, drugged, hanged by the ceiling. I mean, horrific stuff. Horrific stuff. And they'll say, this is exciting. This turns me on. And then we've got these reports in Slate and other places saying we should feel sorry for pedophiles. The other thing that they're trying to do is they're trying to manipulate public perception and manipulate different voting blocks in America by saying, oh, well, we're just like LGBT. This is a sexual preference. This is not a sexual preference. This is a horrific crime. End of story. But yeah, they're very strategic. And because there's so many very wealthy elite pedophiles, they've been doing a very good job at trying to normalize this crime.
Yes, they have. Lori, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We only got about a minute left before the break. Again, Lori's book, Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape. And her website is LoriHandran.com. That's Lori, LoriHandran.com. Also on Twitter, LoriHandran2, at Twitter, the number 2 at the end there. I want to thank you again so much, Lori, for taking the time out to spend with us. It's been a very informative hour, and I'm sure we'll have you back on at some point, because this is one of many conversations that we should have about this.
We didn't even hit the. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, thank you guys so much for having me on. I'm grateful that you care about this crime and this issue, and that you're helping to spread the word about the war on our children.
We've only just begun, believe me.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your gift of time tonight, and thank you so much for your book. And we'll be talking to you again.
Thank you, guys.
Folks, network break. Back with Doug Papa. Buckle up.